Hey, boys and girls, moms and dads, children of all ages, all the ships at sea, planes flying overhead, and submarines under the water. Fish and Frank in the chair here today, and we got guest stars in here, and actually almost like real stars and stuff, like, you know, real, you know, fishing tackle industry type people. At, oh, look at this. I get cards so I know who I'm talking to. Is that what it is? Look at that. He says, Frank, you're an idiot. You don't remember my name.
Hey, I was trying to make it easy. I forget this guy's name all the time.
Well, Fish and Frank in the chair. Gary Loomis in the chair next to me. It really is. Yes, I got to tell you, it's actually Gary Loomis. Yes. And how are you doing, Gary?
I'm doing wonderful, and I'm having a great time.
Yeah. Bye, Angie.
Bye. Thank you.
Gary. Gary's come down to the store, and Colin is with us. And I don't know what your title is there. With
my job is to sell what Gary makes. So he uses his creativity, builds stuff, and then I make sure our partners and the consumers are aware of what we're doing.
Very cool. So, Gary, let's jump right in. Everybody knows you from the former rod companies, but, you know, we've talked about that before, where years ago you had some health issues, and you ended up selling that company to an infamous, well,
Shimano.
If anybody knows the company I don't really get along with, that's the one. And
yeah, I had a little trouble too.
Yeah, I don't do well with them, and I'm proud to say I've cost them many of thousands of dollars. You know, I just had a poor kid in today, and we had to fix his reel because they were too cheap to put a screw to lock a nut in place. And when the big brass was here from Shimano, I said, "Look, it. This is a $16 reel, and you can put a little screw that holds that rotor nut down." I said, "Here's a $230 Shimano that doesn't have it." And I was, you know, so anyway, we have the same feeling about that company. Although I did get a new guy who's theoretically going to turn Shimano back around.
That'd be good.
It'd be nice if they'd actually step up and be a real company again. But you went on after your health issues and everything else, and you got better, and you travel the world and go fishing, and you make fishing poles in Washington State, and they are called
Edge.
Edge.
cutting edge of performance, the edge of technology.
And they're great rods, boys and girls. We have them in the store here, and they're wonderfully light. And you're using a little different technique to build the rods now.
Yeah, you know, weight is the deterrent to performance. Now, yes, a lighter rod is easier to fish and more comfortable, and you can fish all day. But the lightness of the rod really does a lot for the mechanics of the rod, because it makes it cast further, cast straighter, more efficiency and sensitivity. These new rods that we just came out with, we've changed the cork handles to graphite. Graphite is.
I like the new handles on them.
Yeah, everybody
it
does.
It looks amazing. I mean, because you can almost see the material inside of the handle. I mean, it's. Yeah. And it gives it a beautiful look. It's kind of like a stealth fighter. You know?
Well, like I said, it does look nice, but I didn't build it for the looks. I built it for the performance.
Yeah.
And this new graphite handle is about 30% lighter than cork. About 30% more sensitivity, and about 30% stronger.
Now, that's the one thing I notice about the handle when you're holding it. We do a lot of tests, and from the old school, put it up against your Adam's apple.
Yes.
To feel it. Well, the nice part about this new handle is you don't have to touch the blank. It transmits right through the handle material, just like you were holding the blank.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you get a good, comfortable handle. I've never understood, some of these companies have got these expensive rods, and you're holding a plastic reel seat.
Yeah, a plastic reel seat or a foam, styrofoam handle. Well, you know, let me tell you that the rubber is what they put between the engine of your car and the frame to cut down vibration. I don't want to cut down vibration. I want to increase the vibration when I'm fishing.
Exactly. We want to feel, and what it boils down to is when you throw a lure out, it's like fishing with your eyes closed because you cannot see the lure. So if it comes in contact with a piece of grass, a stick, a rock, you want to be able to feel, once you've worked with that rod a while, you want to know the difference between a fish, a stick, a rock, grass, and you can literally feel all those differences with this new handle.
I've had pro staffers, professional anglers, really, really good, high-quality anglers that have had to relearn different techniques because now they're feeling so much more that they haven't ever felt before. 30, 40, 60 years of fishing, all of a sudden they feel things they've never, ever felt.
And it's really good, but there is a slight learning curve. That is the only downside of it, because now you're feeling this stuff, and you touch this blade of grass where you didn't feel it before, and now it's like a strike, and you have to relearn the feel of your rod. And that's what I was saying. When I start off with them, I actually get to feel, and then I start to learn this is a weed, this is a rock, but they're distinctive differences in feeling from all of these things because of the source of the material.
Well, I had one guy tell me the other day, he says, your new handles gave me 30% more time fishing. And I said, why is that? He said, because where I fish, I get a lot of moss or seaweed or grass. I can tell as soon as something gets on that hook, and I can give a little jerk and jerk it clean, and then I'm fishing the rest of the way in, where I used to come all the way in, find out there was something on the hook, and take it off and start over again. So he said, I can dislodge it immediately, and I don't waste that whole trip in.
That's exactly what I'm saying. But to be truthful to the listeners, it does take a little bit, because you'll go out there and you reel it in, you go, I felt something, and you reel it in, and then all of a sudden here's some moss on it. And then your hands begin to learn, that's moss, that's
grass.
You'll
catch more fish because of it.
Because you're not trying to either wonder what's going on, it literally telegraphs more information. Once you learn the language, it's an incredible experience.
You know, the other point that we haven't made yet is that there's a little degradation element with cork between oil transmitted from your hands or bait or whatever. You know, cork gets dirty over time.
And they say I'm a very corrosive substance. Yes.
So, you know. So the carbon fiber won't do that. Sometimes if you're trying to sneak a rod into the house and you got dirty cork and all of a sudden you have clean cork, somebody might notice. But if you bring a new edge rod in, they can't keep track of it by the dirt on the handles.
Yeah, the handle looks just as good in 5 years as it does it at the first day.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly right. You know, a lot of these people, you know, say, but my cork handle pretty soon starts smelling like my bait bucket. You know, well, you don't have to worry about this. You can clean them right up and they're just good as new.
Now, on kind of a different thing, you do have the edge and you help design TFO. You're one of the lead designers on the TFO rods and all that. So when people are looking for real Gary Loomis products, they've got to look to Edge and TFO.
That's what's left. You know, I didn't do TFO until after I left G. Loomis. So there was a lot of new technology that had came along the last few years I was at G. Loomis, and they had taken me out of R&D and design and this type of stuff, which I could never understand, put me in sales.
It's the same idiots who have done everything else wrong. Since that day, they've gone downhill.
Yeah.
So their sales are one-tenth of what they were a few years ago because they keep making the wrong decisions. How do you... doesn't make any sense.
When I built a new building, I paid an additional $40,000 to get the cutting room air-conditioned and humidified, because the material is very sensitive to moisture. And so what did they do? They took the cutting and put it out in the manufacturing, and they took that one and made it into the lunchroom, and took the lunchroom and made it into the Six Sigma room. I just could not believe it. You know, we don't want to talk about
that's
that.
Right.
Anyway, a lot of this.
It's just funny. It goes along with, I try and remind people, and I don't mean to be bashing on them, although they deserve it. I'm sorry. You know, when it goes along. But the TFO rods, now, I fish with one of them. I like there's one you got, I don't think you're making it anymore, but it's got a real short handle on it. I love short handles on the rods. And I'm
we started making longer handles because everybody wanted a little longer handle. I make up your mind.
Well, I'm not. There's normal over there and me way the heck over there. But I throw it one hand.
You know,
I'm not a two-handed caster.
I got to tell you, I've been doing this since the 70s. And Florida has went from 6-inch pistol grip handles to 6-inch straight to 8-inch to 10-inch to 12-inch, back to 8, back to 6. This is the hardest place in the United States to get the right length of handle.
Well, you know, it's also that one little edge rod you've got. I'd have to go over and look at the end of it. But Terry and I are going to be fishing with those through this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we're actually doing is trying to get out and go fishing after months of IRS and, you know, all the rest of the stuff and the health issues. Finally, everything's calmed down. For this hour of this day, we're planning on having, you know, at least a little bit of time to go fishing. And she told me, she said, I want to fish with that edge rod. She says, I want one of those. I said, no problem. I mean, you own the store, girl. You can have whatever you want. And so we're going to be fishing the edge. I like that one short one because I use a lot of small topwaters. I use the 4-inch paddle tails a lot, 06, 09 Rapala X-Wrap, stuff like that. I like because bigger lures, you catch bigger fish, but you don't get to catch all the smaller fish as well.
Yeah.
And I like the more activity. If I want just a big fish, I'm going to throw a big lure. But for the most part, I rely on the snack factor because, you know, I'm 180 pounds and I still like an M&M. You know, it's a little tiny thing. And if I go up to Smorgasbord, there's olives and sweet pickles. I might take one of those or four or five of those little things before I decide on a meal. And I figure big fish think that way, too.
Yeah.
So I'm using a lot of them, especially Rapala's got a new little, I mean, it's gorgeous balsa wood lure. It's absolutely astounding, and it's great out here in the harbor. And the little edge rod is going to be perfect for just twitching that thing along, and I've had my eye on it, and I only got to fish twice last year because of the IRS and stuff. So this year, that's why you didn't really hear from me.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise, but we're going out this week, and we're going to both be fishing the edge rods this week. And so, listeners, I will have my time in on the rods this week.
And let me know. I like to hear after you fish them.
And because I was looking at the handle, and it's fine for me.
Good.
It's not too much.
Good.
Because I'm a big one for, because of the way I hold the rod, I get hit in the side all the time with those longer, you know, especially a lot of the new split butt stuff is so big, I keep beating myself in the side. I end up black and blue at the end of the day from working my lure. So I was looking at that one, and you've got that one. It's a 7-foot, and it looks like a really nice light tip, real heavy through the butt section. That's the one thing I noticed about your rods is, did you go after that light tip, heavy, fast taper? Was that?
Well, you know, we really, it's kind of like a tool. You got a 1/2-inch socket and you got a 9/16 socket. They both look the same, but only one of them fits that 1/2-inch nut.
Right.
And so
it's, and I'm about a 1/2-inch nut. Yes. I don't know if I'm a full 9/16 nut,
yeah,
but I know I'm a
1/2-inch
nut. Yes.
But what I'm getting at is every one of these lures fish a little bit different. And in that, you try to make the right tool to do the right job for what you're trying to do with the particular lure or plastic or plug or whatever. And so I make everything from fast actions, modern actions, slow actions, and everything in between.
Yeah, the one I was playing with last night, I was looking at, I wish I could remember the model number from it, but I load the end of the rods. I use a little soft plastic tube bait, put it over the tip of the rod to see how it's going to work when I'm doing a spook or something, and it's just gorgeous. I mean, it actually felt like you made it for me. I wish I could remember the darn name. I'm half tempted to jump up, go out and look, so I could tell people the model number. But if you come in, I'll show you the rod I'm using. But it's really a nice rod. Like I say, I had the old TFO, and this one's a nicer blank. I like the blank a lot better than the one I had on the TFO because I don't really like a lot of flex in the middle of my rod when I'm working a lure because I'm very specific. If I want to move it 3 inches or 7 inches or whatever, how I want that lure to move, I want the rod to help me do that. I don't want it to flex at the tip and then reflex in the middle where then I don't really know what the darn thing did.
Mm-hmm.
And it's too much of a learning curve. With that Edge, I was playing with it, and I can get exactly what I want out of it.
Yeah. Well, we don't put any coating on our Edge rods, and that's to keep the weight out of the tip of the rod. And we put the right guides on it. We put as light as we can, but the size it needs. Very short wraps and very little finish to keep that weight out, so that the tip of the rod, the recovery of the tip of the rod, works the lure the way that it should work it, and it doesn't have that extra weight to make the tip mushy.
Okay, now here's one of the things. This is a guide question, because I know you have the guides on there, and I saw them, and they look like they're line definition guides, where it's going to help straighten the line out and shoot everything straighter. There's so many different guides now, the K-series guides, the microwave guide with that little tiny thing in it, and all these other ones. How did you decide on the guide that you picked?
Well, you know, there is, and I got to tell you, I don't think there's ever a guide that's came out that we haven't thoroughly tested, because I don't make guides, and if I can buy a guide that makes my rod perform better, that's the guides I'm going to put on my rod. That's all, you know.
Right.
Be ridiculous not to do that. And I just haven't found anything better than what we're doing. We usually stagger the guides down very rapidly. We have the front guide the right distance for the size reel that should be put on that rod.
Now, the rod I'm looking at, the problem is reel companies don't make the same. A 2500 in a pen is the same size as a 3000 in a Shimano.
Yeah.
And the 30 in the Quantum is the 25 in a Daiwa. And the 30 Daiwa is the size of a Ford, you know, in another company. So I'm looking to balance out the size, the diameter of the spool.
That's what you
to
do.
The guide.
That's what that. And the there's a lot of things there. It's the diameter of the spool to the guide, the distance, and the monofilament or braid that you're going to use.
And we play with as many reels as we can find.
Right.
It's our reel bar at the factory is as extensive as you can imagine. And we still, some stuff still pops up every now and then. But if something pops up and we missed it, we make a quick change, you know?
Yeah, the one thing that's what I was wondering, because they cast great. They get phenomenal distance. Everything about it, I mean, it really does great. And that's what I was wondering about the guides, because everybody has a little different choice in guides. And it's, and the one thing, like with the microwave, I've got one company that we sell with this new microwave system on it, but it's the only one I've ever seen work. Every other one, when they bring them in, I have a driveway out behind the store over here across the street. And we literally go there, and I throw with a sinker my rod, my line, and everything. And a quarter-ounce sinker, and I put a rock there, and then I throw with theirs. And we've only had one company with that microwave that actually would cast as far, or actually even a little further. And your Edge rods keep up to that, even though you're not using the microwave system. And with that microwave, it doesn't seem like it's kind of a dysfunctional, and it's got to be the, if it's not perfect, it really is bad.
Yes, that's exactly right. Everything has to be perfect with that, because if it's not, you should be able to take any rod and take that micro guide and just shake off the bottom rod and put that micro guide on it and be able to get more distance.
It doesn't work. Most of them cast worse than normal guides.
But I'm not saying anything bad about
them. We did find one company who does a great job. He's a local guy. He builds them about a mile and a half up the street here. But each one is individually hand-done. Him and three or four of his buddies sit there at night, and everything's all hand-balanced. And it's way too costly to have that done on a normal normal thing. But these guys are doing it for fun at night.
But most of the time, if you have, like I said, the right spool and the right limpness of the line, so that it comes off in the right diameter spool to hit that first guide,
well,
choke it down as fast as you can, and then have all the guides the same size, it glides through theirs and there's no friction.
Here's one thing that I was thinking of, because the smaller guides really do cast better in thing. But in saltwater, we have a problem with leader and leader knots.
Yeah.
And this is something, if you don't know the answer to, maybe you can let me know later. would it be possible, because your guide is nice and small and everything's there, and that 25 is going to be perfect on there, or 30 depending on brand model, coming off and going to some smaller ones, and then on the last four of the rod, would it hurt it to bring those big a little bit bigger?
Yes.
It would hurt it.
Yeah, it's you know, what you want is the weight out of the tip of the rod. You want that, it's like a diving board.
Okay.
You take a diving board, is like a fishing rod, like a pole vault pole. What are you going to store and what are you going to recover?
Right.
So you take her on, you jump on the diving board, that energy recovers you, throws you so far, oscillates so long, and it stops. If I turn around and put bigger guides out on the tip, I've just added 20 pounds or 30 pounds under the end of the diving board. It's the same stiffness, it's just heavier.
Now
when I jump on that diving board, it has to recover me and the 20 pounds. It doesn't tow me as far. It oscillates a longer period of time, showing you it did not discharge as much energy. Now, most people, when they cast, they look at where they're going to cast to. They don't look at their tip. If their tip is wobbling after they make their loaded in their cast, the line is fluctuating back and forth in that, going through the air like this, it doesn't go as far, it's not as accurate, and it's not as sensitive. So yes, it does. Tie a surgical knot between the two, and put your swivel right down towards the bottom if you have to have a swivel.
Yeah, that's exactly the answer I was wondering about.
Yeah, you can pull that surgical.
I was just wondering why, if you define the line through the center guide small, if it would be possible to put, you know, slightly larger tips, I would accept the knot easier. Now, I throw a short leader. I throw 18 inches, 2 feet a leader. So I don't bring my knot up into the tip. But I got guys that are throwing 4 feet a leader, which to me is a little excessive. And so they reel that up into the rod, and they're constantly clipping the knots through the
guides. And they're also pulling out the ring of the guy of the tip top.
Yeah, they do that all the time.
I'm telling you that
I actually do pretty well on replacement tips, so yeah. You know.
Anytime anymore, if you just tie that surgical knot, I think this is what they call it, between the monofilament.
Well, they got an FG and a this and a
double
that.
Double surgeons and uni knot.
There's so many different knots out there. You got to cut. One of the good old-fashioned ones is the old Albright's. They actually did pretty good.
But if you tie that and it, you know, it gets a small knot, you can reel it right up through your guides and have no problem in the casting.
Yeah. So it's a little different, but at least you answered my question. I was wondering about that, and that does make a lot of sense, because I hand guys, when I'm loading a rod to check the feel and the action of it, I give them that little plastic tube bait, which, you know, you can barely feel in your hand. You put it on the end of the rod, and all of a sudden the rod's wobbling all over the place. The center's fluctuating. And they're like, really? Are you kidding? And which it does not do on the edge, by the way.
No.
Center is very nice on the edge.
I didn't make a rod to shake. I made a rod to cast a lure,
right.
Hook a fish, fight a fish, land a fish, come home in the same amount of pieces that it left in.
That's what that's always important.
I don't make store shaking rods.
Yes. But it does do well under the store shaking test, by the way.
Okay.
So, you know, I know you didn't build it for that, but it actually holds up well under that. Because I go through, you've watched me sell rods with sinkers and weights and everything.
That weight is made then to cast it. You're casting the weight. I don't want to cast the tip.
Right.
I want to cast the weight, and I want it to be as efficient as I can to cast the weight or the lure or whatever there. Not efficient to cast the tip.
Right, you're getting him going. He's getting excited now.
I think I almost like talking about fishing as much as I go fishing anymore.
It's every time we get together, it goes on like this, though. You know, because I don't know. I love finding out all this stuff.
Yeah.
To me, that's the most interesting part of this job, is finding out why wouldn't you do this or why would you do that. And, you know, because I get... Literally, I think we've had 260 some people or something like that come through the store here today, and I answer questions all day. And when I get a chance to sit down with you and ask all these questions, that's like, you know, that's gold.
One of the best things that he brings up when he's talking rod design that we haven't quite hit on is, you know, we were talking about naked carbon fiber versus painted carbon fiber earlier, and we effectively have 2.5 thread wraps beyond every guide foot on our and you start to thread and
wait,
epoxy.
Wait. Back up. What the heck did you just say?
So beyond the guide foot on our blanks, when we're attaching our guide,
right,
there's roughly 2.5 thread wraps beyond the foot, so that you don't have extra thread. And extra thread means extra epoxy and
extra
paint
weight
and all of that. And Gary articulates it really well when he's explaining it to people. He's like, you know, a lot thread or epoxy doesn't sound like it weighs very much, but if we can save 2% here and 5% here and 8% here, now all of a sudden we've improved the rod by 20%, even if it is just saving a little bit of thread here and a little bit of guide size here.
You're taking the exact same route as NASCAR does.
Exactly. Yeah.
When you go into a NASCAR auto body shop, when I was living in the real South for a while up by Tennessee, and there was a NASCAR frame shop up there, and these guys and a bunch of good old boys with micrometers, and they would drill and cut and weigh each shaving to micrograms. When they drilled something out, they would collect all of that, had to be collected and weighed and done, because their whole idea was if they could cut a little bit of an ounce, you know, a partial of an ounce here, actually they talked in grams. And it's really funny seeing these redneck guys in the beards and the overalls out there talking in grams and, you know, because they're not using American increments. No. You know, they're using
metric. We talk
metric
a lot in grains.
Yeah.
So
it's actually really kind of neat when you get into the scientific ends of stuff. But that's exactly the way NASCAR does it. These guys got paid huge amounts of money to take ounces out of here and there and grams off here and there on a car frame.
It's never going to be a big step. It's going to be lots of little steps, you know?
You know, it's like the finish on a rod. There's really two ways to coat a rod. One is dip coat it, where they plug the butt so there's no finish getting in the tip. They put it into a tube with finish in it, and they pull the blank out really quickly, and the surface of the material is the squeegee that kind of pulls the material down. Well, in that you get the thinnest finish on the tip and the most finish on the butt, because it runs towards the butt.
Gravity, yeah.
The other way to coat one is with a squeegee. And they take a squeegee.
Really? A squeegee?
Yeah, squeegee. They take a rubber.
Science.
Live rubber, and they cut a hole in it. And then they'll push that blank all the way through, all the way up to the butt of it. They'll tip it up, the finish will run against the end, and then they'll pull it out, and that rubber will squeegee it out. Well, what happens is, the tighter it is here, the more it squeegees off. When it gets down towards the tip, the more it leaves on. So in this, and I've done this over and over with all different type of blanks, a dip coat, you'll lose about 7% of your efficiency of your blank because of the weight. Squeegee coating can be 13 to 15% of the weight and the efficiency of your blank, just the coating on the blank. And when it gets out towards the tip, it's worse than it does when it gets to the butt. That's why I tell you, I don't want bigger guides on the tip.
And efficiency equates to casting distance and to sensitivity. So you're losing both those things when you make a more or less efficient rod.
So, yeah, I don't know why. For some reason, I don't know why I never thought about how they coat the rods.
Yeah, well,
you know what I mean? I just never. And the dip method loads up the butt with it, and the squeegee method loads up the tip with it.
The absolutely opposite. Most of all your blanks in the Orient are squeegee coated, and most of your blanks in the United States are dip coated.
Wow.
They just, you know,
well, I had
easier and cheaper to squeegee coat them than it is to dip coat them.
I'll be darned. I don't know why I never even thought about it before, because 99.9% of all rods have a clear coating over them, because don't most of them go through a sanding process?
Yes, that's right. After they get the cellophane taken off of them, they go through a sanding process.
And the sanding process is one of the big things, from what I've heard, where things can go wrong.
In the old days, before they had a couple of the new sanders that they had, yes, you could oversand them. But today, with the new sanders that they have and this type of stuff and everything else, you can set them sanders up that'll take off about 5 thousandths, 2.5 off of each side from the tip to the butt. And we mic them, you know, every 10 or 15 blanks, we mic them to make sure that everything is set up and that particular blank is working, standard working just right. In the old days, I think it was Lou Childress did a blank called a Rawhide blank, and it was all because it wasn't sanded is why it was so tough.
Right. Well,
that was just another selling deal. But if they're sanded wrong, you can do that. But the thing is, it's excess amount. Take a wash rag, dip it in water, put it in your hand and squeeze it. Squeeze it as hard as you can squeeze it. Where's the wettest part of the wash rag? At the surface, because you're squeezing the last drop out towards the surface. So what happens when we squeeze this blank with the cellophane, when we cellophane it, we squeeze any excess resin to the surface. This excess resin is like a finish, is like a coating, is nothing but weight. You want to sand that off to get that excess weight out of there. And then if you don't really looking for the best performance, you put a finish on it, because some people want blue, green, yellow, pink. Mine are black satin, kind of like the old Model A Ford, black, black, or black.
Yeah, but it's actually the color of the graphite.
That's the color of the graphite. That is the graphite.
It's just the materials it was made out of.
And your resins for your finish are two-part epoxies.
Right.
Two-part epoxies are just about one-tenth as tough as the epoxy that we use in the graphite, which is heat-cured. And so you'll never scratch it. You'll never, it's just, it'll look the same in 10 years as it did the day you bought it. I don't care if you set it in the sun or whatever. Sun will break down your epoxies, two-part epoxies, but it won't break down that finish in that blank.
Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful, beautiful rod.
Yeah.
Like I say, Terry and I are going to go out and fish with those. We're treating ourselves this year.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to be pretty, but it's really better to be performance.
Yeah, that's... any guys... never mind. But yes, that's 100% true. So, have you got a chance to fish here in Trailer Harbor yet?
I have in the past. I haven't this trip.
But one of these days you're going to come down so that you and I can actually...
It's about time you invite me. It's about time.
You know, I invited you 2 years ago when you were here.
Well, I think 2 years ago I had time.
Yeah, 2 years ago, yeah. And then, but you've had surgery. You missed our tent sale. You weren't able to come.
Boy.
But you had surgery in your ankle and everything was all messed up. He's showing me pictures of screws and bolts. And
I mean,
you're part bionic now.
I got two titanium screws that are over... 6 inches long from my heel all the way up into the floating bones, three coming in from the left and three coming in from the right, 7.5 hours, but I got to tell you, the pain is gone.
There you go.
So, I mean, I can't be any happier, and just as soon as I get through the 7-hour surgery deal, I'll be out running and chasing.
All right, now I got one other question. You got to go to Australia and fish a while back. What was that like in Australia?
It was great. I got to fish for Barramundi, and I got to tell you, Barramundi is a great fish. If you ever get a chance to fish for a Barramundi, you ought to do
my
it.
My two dream fishing trips are Alaska and Australia.
Yeah.
Those are the two places I want to go. I fish most of Europe, everywhere I wanted to fish there, Central America, South America. My last two major goals is Australia and Alaska.
Well, now, if you're going to Alaska to fish for salmon, you better think again. The big fish now, salmon, are in Chile.
Really?
In 1950, 51, 52, and 53, they took eggs from the Columbia River, and they took them down and put them in the rivers in Chile. They didn't know if they really took or not. They started to come back very slowly. The trout season is usually over in Chile when the salmon were coming in. 2 years ago, I went down. I went down the last 4 years in a row. But anyway, 2 years ago.
And you didn't invite me. Not one of the four times.
I got to tell you.
Call and say, Frank, we're going to Chile.
I tell you, I get so excited about going down, I forget to tell anybody. I just go. But we
next
caught.
Time I want to call. Hey, Frank, we're going to Chile.
Well, okay. We're going to Chile in January or early February next year. But just think about this. Now, I fished in the heydays of Alaska in the Kenai River. Nothing like this.
Really?
In 7 days of fishing, three of us caught 119 Chinook salmon. 5% of them were below 20 pounds. 5% of them were between 20 and 35. And 90% of them was 35 to 75.
Wow.
I mean, there is no place in the world that you can catch these kind of salmon. They are out.
So now I have to have three fishing destinations.
Well, if you're going to Alaska for just salmon, you only need to go to two. You need to go to Chile. Yeah. But Alaska's got good trout fishing. It's got good halibut fishing and lingcod.
Yeah.
And this is just for one of my friends that owned a half interest in a fishing lodge in King's Silver Salmon Lodge in Alaska. Had never caught a true 40-pound Chinook.
Yeah.
I took him down. He caught 6 over 40, 4 over 50, and 2 over 60.
Wow.
I mean, now that's breaking your bucket list. It's smashing it all to heck.
Yeah, no. That is.
No.
All right, back to the Barramundi in Australia. How was that?
To me, it was exciting. I fly fished for most of them. And I used a popper, lefty craze popper, and we fished the rivers a little bit, and that was really good. But then we started fishing the outside just at the mouth of the rivers. And I guess, you know, you've always got that one that you remember. And it was a dead tree hanging over this rock. And I said, if I could throw this thing right in between that rock and that dead tree, I know there's got to be one there. I took a cast, perfect cast. It was going beautiful. Wind came over the top of the rock and blew that popper right into that old dead tree. I says, oh, no. And all of a sudden, this Barramundi came up out of the water, grabbed that thing in midair, broke the tree all into little pieces floating around on the water, and busted me off. Yahoo! It was one of my most exciting days, you know. But I caught Barramundi up to 45, 50 pounds, and they are a tough, great fish. If you ever get a chance, you need to do it.
I'll find out where you went, because yeah. Terry and I want to do that. That's one of the things on our bucket list. And luckily for me, she did win some lotto money.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, she's actually lucky. We've saved enough from what she won to actually be able to take a good vacation.
And there's another place, if you do, go to Barramundi ranch. It's on the can't think of the name of the bear base.
Yeah.
It's up at the north end of Australia, and at night, tell them you want to go hook a big fish.
Really?
They asked me if I wanted to hook a big fish. I said, no, I want to catch a big fish. I said, we can't help you catch it, but we can help you hook it. I said, well, if you help me hook it, I'll catch it. So I went out there, and I started to wade out to cast. He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to wade out and cast. So they took the torch, which is a flashlight. They looked up and down the beach. There was two big boats right alongside to kind of protect you. And all I could see is these gleaming eyes from these saltwater crocs. I said, I think I can cast from here. So I cast out, put the rod in the deal, and pretty soon I had just the clicker on, and click, zit, 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 I hooked this fish. I got to tell you, we had 30-pound test line, and I had a solid fiberglass rod that they had there in a big old pen reel. I'd say in about 10, 15 minutes, they had all the line, broke me off at the spool. No way. I thought a couple times I had the fish coming, and I think he was just stopped to feed, and then he just kept on going. So I said, well, I'll tell you. So I filled another spool up, strung it out, doubled it. Didn't have as much, but I had 60-pound test line. They took it all. So today, I don't know what they were, but you didn't catch them on 60. I keep telling people I want to take a big stake up there, stake myself out, chain myself to the stake, take 130. I want to see what those fish were. So,
well, I've got. When you get ready to go, let me know, because I want to go with you.
Okay, okay.
I got some 600-pound test.
Yeah, we need. But I think then, you need a big stake.
Then harnesses, yeah. And we'll tie. We can tie ourselves off to a pickup truck.
There you go. There you go. No, it's a great place to go. If you get a chance to go, go there.
Yeah, no, like I say, I'm actually really looking forward to those two adventures. and because I've been lucky enough, I've not fished South America yet. I've most of Central America, North America, Europe, but I've done Canada, but I have not done Alaska yet. So that's one of my North American goals, to get to Alaska.
Well, let me tell you, to go up there, you got to go by Washington State Woodland. If you don't stop and go fishing with me in Washington, I'm gonna put the voodoo on you, and you're going to catch nothing in Alaska.
Well, I promise.
I know all the guys in Alaska, and they will not let you catch a fish.
And I used to live in Oregon, and I remember back then I had long hair, and woman threatened to cut my hair off if I didn't pronounce it correctly. I've taken motorcycles up to the top of Mount Hood, Seaside, all over there, fished the Columbia River Basin. Oh. I know Highway 30 very well.
Yep. Highway 30 goes by my duck club. He was over there last year. She had elk hunting and duck hunting and deer hunting.
It's oh, yeah. Beautiful I'll area. Definitely be there.
Huh? Beautiful area.
Yeah, I like it up there. I like it a lot. And I was lucky enough. Yeah, I forget when they built the one building that's now the tallest building in Portland. I forget what it was, but I was an insulation inspector on that building for a while.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
so how many years was that ago?
It was back in the 70s, right after St. Helens. All the ash was still there.
When St. Helens was in the 80s.
The 80s, yeah. I was there in the 80s, right after Mount St. Helens. And, I mean, I got there, and everything was still covered in ash.
Yeah, it was kind of a downer for a couple years.
Well, it was really cool because I didn't live there.
Yeah.
You know, I just came in, and, you know, and I mean, okay, it's a volcano stuff. And there was a big side of mountain missing and all that. It was really cool.
Yeah.
So, and as I was there for a while, everything kind of got nice, and amazing how much stuff grew out of that ash. It's like the ultimate fertilizer.
It is. So, you're having the same thing right where I'm telling you to go down to Chile to go. That volcano went off 8 miles from the lodge there, and it's the same thing. They said that once they got, you know, the 16 inches of ash off of it, everything is growing like they never had it grow before.
So. Yeah, it's amazing how destruction tends to lead to rebirth if you survive it.
Yeah.
Trick is always surviving. I forget who was asking me today. I said, well, I had one of those before Charlie. He said, well, what'd you lose in Charlie? I said, not much. My house, my store, my belongings. Other than that, everything was fine. You know, but what doesn't kill you really beats the heck out of you.
Yeah. I remember one time a guy asked me how I caught so many fish. And I said, look at your rod. Your rod's too short. Your rod's too stiff. You got too heavy of line, too much lead, too big bait. Other than that, you're probably doing fine.
What's the old Irish expression? Prepare for the worst and hope it gets over with quickly.
Are you sure we're not related?
I think it could be.
All right. Anyway, boys and girls, Gary and them got to get out of here. So we've actually kept him a little over his allotted time limit here. TFO Rods. Gary designs and develops rods for TFO. And Gary's own company is Edge. Now, you click the little Edge icon right next to this broadcast, and it will take you to the Edge website, and you can look at all their rods. We do have some in stock, but they have a lot more there on the Edge website. And then, of course, we do have TFO and Edge here in the store you can come in and look at. And if you get a chance, we're going to talk hopefully about being at tent sale next year. We're going to work out some type of arrangement. But try and test out some of the rods. Come on down, play with them, feel them. And even though Gary says he didn't build it to be shaken in the store, it's still fun to play with them. They're amazing to play with.
The TFO rods, you know, what I say, in my Edge rods are like for the top 10-15% of the people, you know, that really know and fish and want that type of performance. But I got to tell you, that TFO rod is better for the other 85 or 90% of the class deal, and the people that really know the difference say, wow, how can you build this kind of a rod for this price? So there's no rod in your store that performs as well as that TFO rod for the dollar.
Yeah, no, they got some great products. I've been selling them for a long time.
Yeah.
So anyway, Fishing Frank here in the chair. This is Gary Loomis, and once again, thank you so much, sir. And we got Colin in the other chair over here. Poor guy sitting here looking at us going, hey, won't you guys ever shut up?
This is the story of my life. I listen to these stories all day long. I consider myself real lucky.
So anyway, boys and girls, thank you so much for listening, and we will see you on the next Radio Fishing. All right, bye-bye.
Nice job. Thank you.